4 days later, on the 9th of April, 1566, Orange, Harness, and Egmont struck again. They pronounced their disgust at the way they had been treated by the crown, and they announced their intention to go into exile. They had chosen their moment really rather well, because at this point, Margaret was completely dependent upon the support of the grandees to keep the Confederates in order, to restrain them. Margaret, therefore, was again forced to compromise, and she was only able to convince the grandees to remain at their posts, and even then for only 2 more months, by promising, first of all, to ask King Philip to grant them more lands, more titles, and more money, and second of all, she promised that the noble-dominated Council of State, which up to this point had really only been a rubber stamp of Philip II's orders, rather along the model which obtained in Habsburg Spain at this point, she promised to ask that this noble-dominated Council of State should now assume real decision-making power. In other words, the grandees were to be given more material benefits, and they were to be given more political power. Now, at this point, the situation began to get out of hand. Calvinist ministers came out in public. They began preaching open-air services to huge crowds. And by the end of the summer of 1566, royal observers who attended these services to see what was going on were reporting back to the crown that the people who came to them were often fully armed. By now, the grandees themselves were starting to get a little nervous, and they pressed the Confederates to stop these open-air services. The Confederates responded merely by upping the ante. They demanded full toleration of the various Protestant religions, but in the interval, they agreed to help keep the peace, and they agreed at least to suspend the open-air services while their demand for full toleration was being processed. Unfortunately, by now, even the Confederates themselves had lost control of the situation. And if anyone had the power to dictate events, it was the Calvinist hedge preachers. This is again a situation we've seen before, that aristocrats and the established political interests of a nation play a delicate game of trying to destabilize the crown in exchange for concessions, but aren't able to keep control of events in their hands. And more initiative passes further down the social ladder to the common people, and things tend to blow up. The Calvinist hedge preachers, like I said, who may have had the power to dictate events, were preaching some pretty inflammatory stuff. In the midst of soaring unemployment in the towns, in the midst of a food price crisis so high that people were rioting in the marketplaces to get bread, the Calvinist ministers began preaching that the Catholic Church was the whore of Babylon, that its priests were the minions of Antichrist, and that Catholic churches were foul temples of idolatry. The consequences were fairly predictable. In August of 1566, Catholic churches all over the Netherlands began to be invaded by Calvinist crowds. The crowds would destroy every single religious image they could get their hands on, statues, stained glass windows, and the like. In Flanders alone, one province, out of 17 in the Habsburg Netherlands, over 400 churches and convents were sacked. It's hard for us to figure out exactly who these iconoclasts were, and it seems pretty clear that no single generalization is going to describe all of them. But at the very least, it is clear that in many places, the iconoclasm was the work of fairly small cadres, well-organized small cadres. In one case, we know there was a group of roughly 50 to 100 hardcore iconoclasts who had actually been recruited and paid by the underground Calvinist churches in Antwerp and other towns. And this gang traveled all the way from Poperinge in western Flanders all the way to Hertogenbosch on the Rhine, that is to say, roughly halfway across the country, sacking churches and convents and destroying images all along the way. Now, to the Calvinist minority, given all the persecution they had suffered at the hands of the crown, at the hands of the Royal Inquisition, and in particular, given their deeply felt objections to pictorial representations of the sacred, you'll recall that Calvin felt that there was a conceptual gulf between God and God's creatures, and for human beings to presume to represent God or saints or any aspect of the transcendent was an abomination. Given all of this, the destruction, in from a Calvinist point of view, it seems to me, was fairly understandable. But from the perspective of the Regency government, to Margaret of Parma herself, this iconoclastic fury, as it's come to be called, was an assault on everything that was holy and on everything that was sacred, and it represented, crucially, a complete collapse of public order. Therefore, on the 29th of August, in the year 1566, Margaret of Parma sent Philip a fairly alarming letter. She informed him, first of all, that half of his subjects in the Netherlands were infected with heresy. She informed him that there were fully 200,000 people up in arms against her authority. And finally, she informed Philip that the grandees, the key officers of the crown, were themselves merely sitting back and waiting to carve up all of the provinces among themselves.